You're listening to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast from Misadventures of an Adoptive Dad.
Well, hello, Scott, and welcome to this, which is the 14th episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast.
Woo!
Ooh, yeah.
Fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
I have to say, I'm slightly worried that we're the Trade Description Act, because we very rarely talk about fostering. Do you think we should maybe do something about fostering soon?
I know. We should.
Yeah. Because it's Foster really Fair Fortnight, isn't it, in May?
I saw that, actually, the other day. Yes, yeah. I did.
And they're special, because they have 2 weeks, whereas adoption only has 1 week.
I know. We only get one, don't we? That's the thing. Yeah. So unfair. We need to do something about that.
Maybe we can.
I don't think I could cope with any more in the week.
No.
Adoption week, actually.
It is just you fall from one champagne reception to another, don't you? Yeah.
No, I do not. Thank you. Do you know what? That's one thing that National Adoption Week is not. It's one. Well, to be fair, if you get invited or you win an award, that's probably just one night of Prosecco. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a week-long thing, is it?
No, but I don't know you that well, Scott, but I do see that you have an amazing capacity to create spontaneous celebrations everywhere you go. Something like that, anyway. Anyway.
Yes.
Yep.
Just to rewind back there, you say each other loads of times, and we've got to know each other really well, so you can't keep using that.
Right.
Yeah.
funny man. Now, there's a few things we need to talk about. Don't be sensible. We've got nearly 5,000. Yeah, you are. But we've got nearly 5,000 downloads.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Blimey. Who knew that that would happen?
Who knew? Most of them are my mother, apparently, and your husband.
Okay. So, yeah, quite well.
Probably. What you've got a plan, haven't you, for the summer? A little expedition, a road trip. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So my plan is that I'm going to America to drop my oldest son off for his American summer job, which is working in the summer camps, you know, the American summer camps that they
very
do
good,
all
yes.
summer. So hugely proud, can I just say, hugely proud.
Well
and very, I've no doubt when it comes to it, I'll be very emotional. But anyway, I thought to myself, well, actually, I didn't think to myself, my husband thought, why don't you do what you've always wanted to do, is try and do some interviews with some adopters who are in foster carers who are based in America to kind of talk about the days and the process and all that kind of stuff between us and them. So that's
Can
what I'm going to do. I'm going to
point.
Travel.
You're going to travel. You do understand how the internet works,
Go
don't
on.
You? You do understand how the internet
I do
works.
Understand. But there is nothing better than sitting in IR now in our little studio here that's sponsored by somebody and actually doing it face to face. That's the thing. There's only so much you can ask over a 20-minute FaceTime call or a Skype call. This is face-to-face. This is real life. This is proper. Maybe sitting in their homes, maybe sitting in the hotel lobby. Who knows? But it's going to be proper, face-to-face, ask questions.
Well, that could be really interesting.
Blunt up front, etc. And I am very excited to do it. And I've had loads of people come forward so far, absolutely loads of people.
I'm slightly worried about
where
your
I'd
safety.
Where I'd want them to be.
I'm worried about your
Why
safety.
Why would you be worried about that?
Well, I don't know. I think you're a good-looking lad, and I think... You know, you wandering into the backwoods. You know, it's a genuine concern.
The bears.
Yeah, there's bears out there, and they've got guns, and they've got, I don't know.
Yeah, I assure you, it'll all be done in public, and there will be no risk to my health or my physical health anyway. Maybe my mental health might suffer a little bit. But
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, I've always been really intrigued by American adoption culture, and I've yet to really get to the bottom of their legal processes and stuff. And I think their culture is slightly different to the whole thing around surrogacy.
Hugely.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And I think there's some stuff there that we could probably...
And even foster care as well. Foster care is
Yeah,
definitely. So I have a request to you.
Yeah.
And to any listeners, if they have any questions that they would like me to ask while I'm there, then they need to pop them onto Twitter.
You should set up
and
a
I
Twitter
will
account
ask the questions.
Scott
it's
goes
as simple
to America
as
Twitter.
I should really, shouldn't I?
Then we can just send them all there.
No. Gay Adoption Dad, we'll just do it for now, thank you. It's I don't have the time to do another one, please. No. Please, it's my brand. Excellent. So right, yeah, then. So that's what I'm doing.
That's cool. I'm not even slightly jealous, though you did invite me, but...
I did invite you.
You didn't invite me. I would love to go on set. That would be the most hilarious. We'd but have to make a documentary.
I knew you probably couldn't come. It'll be interesting what we get out of it. And can I just say, I only invited you because I felt I had to, not because you wanted to come. So I was really pleased when you said you wanted
that's
to come.
That's because I've got the passwords to the account. So that's the only reason you keep me on board.
Of course.
You just realised, haven't you?
It's because you get paid to do it. Anyway.
You do understand that you'll have to claim it all on expenses. You know that, don't you? The podcast expenses.
There is no expenses. There is no expenses. Listeners, do not be fooled. There is no expenses. Mr. Coates does not pay money for things like this. It's all done out of the kindness of our hearts.
Well, that's what Scott does. I know that my accountant, my money's now all offshore since we went global. Anyway, I'm aware that people who tuned into the podcast will be bored.
Yeah, I'm getting bored now.
By our banter. So I had a really...
Yeah.
I've got an interview with Honor Rhodes, who's from the Tavistock relationship. Now, I have to say, this was really bizarre because she contacted me out of the blue and said, I think we should talk in that voice. And I went, all right, okay. Mm. And I was a bit suspicious. Then she said, I can give you cake. So I said, on that basis alone, I'll come.
Oh, you were there then.
Transparent. Yeah. And so my schedule worked out that I had a spare hour. So we came along. And I have to say, I had probably the most fantastic hour I've ever had having met someone. It was just amazing. She was hilarious. What good fun we had. But she didn't have cake. But she did have Scott. Mm-hmm. What she did have was bones.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh. Hit it out of the park. What a woman.
Oh, don't like her already.
Yes, I know.
She's obviously listened to our podcast.
She has. So let's put the interview on and then let's have a little chat about what she talked about.
Okay.
So, cheers.
Do.
So today I'm speaking to Honor Rhodes, and you work for the Tavistock Relationship Institute?
Just Tavistock Relationship.
Just Tavistock Relationship. That's kind of branded, isn't it? That's pretty hip and trendy. So can you tell me a little bit? We've just been having a conversation, haven't we? And kind of I've stopped and said, let's record this. This is fantastic. Could you tell me a little bit about what you do, what the Tavistock does, just really briefly, and then we'll get on to what you can offer for adopters and your perceptions of adoption and adoptees and adopted families?
I think I've really enjoyed our conversation because we've been talking about one of the invisible relationships in family life, which is that we've got very good at thinking about how well parents are parenting, and we've got all sorts of skills that we can teach people if they're struggling. That's what parenting programs, that's the stuff of them, isn't it? But I suppose my organisation has been always preoccupied with what goes on between those two adults when they don't need to be married, they don't need to be heterosexual, and they may not live together. And some of them will be adopters and some of them won't. And there's something about that relationship that is the engine that keeps families going.
Yeah.
Because rarely is it that families break down. It's that relationship that breaks down and then families have to reorganise themselves in completely different ways. So we've been interested in this for the last nearly 100 years. And I think we've kept it quite secret. But I'm really pleased that now there are people who are beginning to think about this and what could we do that would make a difference, that would support families wherever they are and however they're constituted to manage their lives better. So we run a number of things that we're interested in that touch on adoption. And I suppose I should say that I'm a social worker by training and been very interested in adoption work, spent some time managing adoption and fostering services myself, and have seen the difference. And indeed, I've been contacted by a young woman who, the very last families I ever worked with, is a social worker who found me on Facebook and told me about her life, her astonishingly wonderful adoptive family. So we've been really interested in what's particularly special about adopters and what gets missed along the way. So we've got a project that the DfE are funding at the moment, which is about helping social workers better prepare themselves to prepare potential adopters for the work.
That's interesting, yeah.
Because I think adopters have all these processes and assessments, and it goes on and on. But I sort of wonder how equipped social workers are to really ask the questions about relationship quality, so that they can put in the mind of people some of the struggles and strains that having a child produces. And we've just been talking about the research that Phil and Carolyn Cowan have done, which shows that all relationships on the arrival of a child plummet in relationship quality. And we had a conversation about when it gets better, and I've tried to persuade you that it does eventually get better.
You're painting a very bleak picture.
Well, I think it's better that we know. And I think these are averages. Some people are carry on at honeymoon levels, which is probably all the people we know. But I feel like adopters should know that. So they should know that having a child, however you come by this child, attacks your relationship. And we've also been talking about the Selwyn report, and I was saying how devastated I was to read that quote that from a woman who said, I felt I had to choose between my marriage or the child. And I don't know which she chose. And I think, what an impossible, awful choice to be put in.
And I think I see that repeated a lot with families that I know, where you see the strains and people have put themselves in a position where actually they can't go on, and so one person's left shouldering the children and the other one goes off. And that's not, it's not every adoptive family, but it's not unusual.
No, but it's not by design, and yet it happens. So it feels a bit like it might be, there might be something designing that.
Yeah.
And the design feature for me is ignorance, really. So I think that really, if we equipped social workers to be able to tolerate, ask really interesting, thoughtful, kind, good-hearted, intelligent questions about relationship quality. There are all sorts of scales and measures for measuring relationship quality. We should use those. We should explain exactly to adopters why we're doing it. Because one of the things that we might be saying to them is, in embarking on this choice, you may be imperiling something. Think about that.
That's really interesting, isn't it? That's that, the frankness of conversation at the very outset of people's journey.
Yeah. I sort of think then that maybe some people go, do you know what? We don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And some people will go, do you know what? I think we will. But what will you do to help us safeguard our relationship? What post-adoption support looks at supporting parental couple relationships?
Mm-hmm.
None. None. Just going to say that again. Yeah. None. And I hope that our interventions will end up on that magical list. But I just think, because we think about parental couples and we think about them, whoever they are and whatever they're doing, adopters were a very natural constituency for us. So we've been fantastically advised. We've got an expert reference group, and I am very desirous of having you on it. And I know you spend your life being expert, and it must be so tedious, but nevertheless, I think there's something really important about that. So the project that we're running at the moment, which the DFEF funding under the post-adoption support, is to do training for social workers, to run some groups for adopters to make sure that we are getting it right, and to offer some counselling sessions. We want to see which a better intervention might be. We're putting them toe-to-toe, really. And we've written some guidance, which I will send you a link to. And we've just, you know, it's about what is it that we know that might help here?
I mean, I think that's really interesting, because I know that at times of stress, the person you go to is your partner, whatever flavour of partner you have. But if in that parent role, then if that's fractured or the cracks are appearing and you can't go there, then where do you go?
Where do you go? And the truth is that we will probably go to one of our own family members who will have reasons for allying themselves with us, perhaps against our partner. I know, if I go and talk to my mum about something that's difficult, you know, I know I'll get a lot of solid support. I know that some people will be wise and thoughtful about this, but mostly that place where we go, where there is somebody neutral who makes no judgment but just insists on better communication, it's a rarity, isn't it? So the programme that we run, this Parents as Partners programme, which we've tested on a lot of willing adopters who've been incredibly generous with their time and help and thought about it, we wanted to see if this programme that is just a programme using the parental couple relationship as the change mechanism for improving children's outcomes would work for adopters. Of course it did. Mm-hmm. But the key things that you look at in this 16-session programme are about conflict reducing and communication improvement, but much more really about forming a team to face the child and being solid so that we're not played. We can hold the line, knowing that our partner will support us. And I think it's great. It's been devised by these two absolutely delightful clinical psychologists in America who are now in their late 70s, 80s, who've lived their lives doing this work. And they said, they never expected, they're clinical psychologists with a child focus, they never expected to be ending up in this territory. But the research drew them to it. The evidence is clear that if you are going to do something that persists, has a persistent, enduring, positive effect for children, this is probably the relationship to pick. Because you can improve children's life chances early. The minute things are going wrong, you could improve this relationship. And people may separate. It'll still, the improvement remains because you've got a co-parenting team, whether they live together or apart. And that's what children need. They need that alliance. I need the confidence of knowing that however difficult I am, I'm not going to make these people in front of me fall apart and shatter. Mm-hmm. And if you think, I suppose I've been thinking a lot since thinking that we were going to meet today about the children I knew with their multiple placements and their sense of omnipotence and power, and how the only people who could hold the line were the people who didn't have to do it on their own. Sometimes I think we've got people who are adopting on their own and they do a very good job because they don't have to have that other person.
That's interesting, because I know that if I've got a weekend with my children alone, there are certain aspects of it that are easier.
Yeah.
Because we're doing it this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think Paula would probably say the same. There's a unique different stresses, because when it all unravels, you've still fit all on you.
Yeah.
But, I'll be careful, because my wife will take me to book when she probably never...
There'll undoubtedly be a conversation full of meaning about the couple.
Yeah.
Which will be great.
Yeah, I'll be left crying in the corner. I guess Well, one of the main issues is, will you be reporting back on the results from your...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we certainly will. So we've got... So what I will do, now that I have met you, is that I will send you the materials that we have and the outcomes that we've got. And the programme that we're running for the Department for Education is runs for another year. So we're just about to start the full year now, and that's going to have all sorts of activities inside it, but a lot of training. We need to see what it is that social workers can make use of that they will then actually use in their practice.
Yeah.
So there's a bit about tracking that through. I still think, for me, one of the issues is that we don't teach social workers this stuff when they're training to be social workers. So this ends up as a novelty.
There's a bit of CPD if you've got the time and you manage your releases.
And I don't really understand. How can we have allowed that to happen?
Because I predominantly work with foster carers, and I'm thinking about if you're sending me these tools, I think that's a key part of our assessment process is, your relationship.
Exactly the same.
Who do you go to? Where do you go to? When things get wobble, who do you hold on to?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I'm thinking about people who are maybe listening to this or people I know. Can people access what you're doing now at this stage? How do they do that?
We hope that the training for social workers will be a national affair. Our groups are run in London, but we've got to make a decision about somewhere else, so perhaps we should talk to you about that. It's a pilot, so it's not huge, but the Parents as Partners programme is one of the programmes that the DWP have put on their approved list of programmes, so we're hoping that when a very large tender comes out soon, there'll be Parents as Partners programmes across the country running somewhere. So we hope that they'll be accessible for everybody. And for me, the issue is that what unites those groups is their struggle they have with their relationships rather than whether they're adopters or not adopters. There's a lot that I think anybody can get from a group that's running locally. I do think there's something very special about adopters, but when you gather adopters in a room, it is often that they want to talk about the process and the painful nature of that. And there are things that are absolutely particular to them, but I suppose I would like the comfort to be offered to adopters, which is a lot of the struggling is the stuff they share with people who've not adopted, actually. And I think there's some comfort in thinking that the way you have chosen to become a family isn't the thing for which you should be punished by the pain you're experiencing. It's just life.
Yeah, and it was interesting, we were talking at the beginning how parents, all parents, struggle.
Yeah.
And you talked about the graph, about how people, you know, on arrival of children, it changes everything.
Yeah.
Literally, you know, the person you were in a relationship with is not that person anymore.
No.
Their role is changed and altered. But also we were mentioning how adopters often come with a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And they may have weathered storms together, but they're not this storm. You know, they may have weathered IVF, childlessness, and that can cause tensions in a relationship if it's attributed to one person, which it obviously usually is. And there's a whole unique set of stuff going on there.
I think that's right, and I think that colours, and it makes some relationships stronger and it makes some relationships more vulnerable. And sometimes the adopting couple aren't really an adopting couple. There's an adopter and a partner.
Ooh, you're moving us into interesting areas now, aren't you?
You know, for the person who says, I will support this because I love you. It's not my natural choice, but I can see that for you this is hugely important. And because I love you and we want a family, we will do this. But
that's very private. People would... You know, and as a social worker, I know I've been assessed to adopt, whatever, 6 times through it, however many times. I only tell my social worker what they want to hear.
Yeah, yeah. And how sensible are you? And that's exactly what those parents are doing. And we accuse children of being manipulative. I think it's astonishing, isn't it, that, you know, we are all of us striving to get the things that we desire from the world. And I blame no adopters. But I think that if we could allow for these varying responses to the idea, none of which are... It doesn't make you less of a good couple.
Absolutely.
It just makes you a more honest couple. And it might then also indicate that you would be a family that we would like to be... making sure that we check in regularly, that we remind you of support, that we actually commission some relationship. You know, most organisations have got to relate close by. Why not give these people 10 sessions of counselling?
Because post-adoption support is uniquely focused on children, and even the government's adoption support fund is for children.
Yeah.
And often the issue could be resolved, you know, if you fix the adults... You provide an environment where children can blossom. I'm being really careful what I'm saying. You can tell, can't you? I'm trying not to upset anyone. But that's my experience, is that my experience of adoption, 18 years, is that the main thing that's changed is me.
Yeah.
And my relationship with Paula.
And that's the only thing you can actually control. And so the challenge is, how do we offer parents the opportunity to be the best parents they can be? And the best parents they can be, if they're in a couple relationship, is that they do it together. They don't need to agree, and they need to have ways of disagree. Yeah. And it isn't that we don't want conflict. Every child in the world needs to see conflict.
And they need to see resoluted.
Resoluted. They want to see resoluted. I do too. We need to see that conflict management. So I think that the post-adoption support fund has to now include stuff about supporting the adult here, because I think otherwise we're saying we're going to fix the child. And I don't think these children, you know, we shouldn't have that emphasis about fixing the kid.
Yeah.
It's families that need, love and support and an enduring walking beside
because
them.
I've often, I don't know, you're a social worker, but I've often been in an environment where there's someone looking at a child going, it's the child. And I've been thinking to myself, I'm not under any illusion about the child.
Yeah.
However, well, let's talk about you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what you said and what you did and how you did it.
Yeah.
And that's not to point fingers, but I just think that even just raising that and giving people that idea that actually, well, maybe my buttons are being pressed. Maybe I need to get rid of some of these buttons or find a way of putting a guard over the buttons.
Yeah.
You also mentioned at the beginning that people can self-refer if they're within striking distance of Tavistock Relay, which is central London, isn't it?
But I think we're also experimenting. If people want to be part of our great experiment, then we're going to do some Skype and, you know, online counselling. So
if people go to your website, is there a route in to get support?
Absolutely. Just talk to us. And also, if we can't help you, then we'll have a good idea about who might be able to.
Now, my presumption is that that's deeply expensive, but you've disavowed me of that notion. Tell me your pricing policy.
We are a charity, so what we like to do is we like to offer as much therapy and counselling as we can for very little cost. And from the wealthy, we extract as much as we can. which on our Robin Hood principle. Our project, so our adoption project at the moment and our Parents as Partners project, funded by the DWP, of course, are free. And so we are busy. We're busy trying to attract in as much project income as we can, because that then continues to allow us to do stuff for free. So I would urge anybody who wants to think about having a conversation with somebody about the quality of their couple relationship to be brave, log onto the website, have a look.
Yeah.
Like, tolerate the thought for a start. It's the first thing to do. And then talk. Then talk to us and see what we can do.
It's a terrible gender stereotype, but I would say it's probably the men that are going to need the persuading, isn't it?
Gina, I think that's brave to say, and I think it is probably true. But as we were just talking before we started recording, you know, there's something about often women just generally in life are help seekers.
Yeah.
And it isn't that we're better at seeking help or we register it, the need for it. It's just that, you know, these are very gendered roles, and a different sort of society would be different. So we women rush off and find some help in our heterosexual couples, and our men folk come with us because they love us. And the conversation I was having was about how, you know, what happens then is the sort of the misery ends up much more equally shared halfway through the process. So that feels fairer. And then at the end, we've sort of restored both parts of the couple to the point where the man was when they came in. So because we're measuring very carefully people's mental health and distress, we can track that.
Yeah.
And so I am pleased to say that I think that whoever comes and brings the other, we can help both.
And do you see positive results? I guess that's the point to finish on.
Yeah, we do. And the bravery of people to tackle this. It's a one secret relationship. People are now very happy to say, oh, I'm in therapy, my child is having, you know, some form of exotic form of therapy. But I bet we don't know anybody who said publicly that they're having couple therapy.
That's
or counselling.
Absolutely.
But because what does it mean? You know, we always assume it means that one or other of the people have had an affair, or that they're not having sex, or both.
But it's not true.
People are just unhappy. But it may be true.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that brings people, a counsellor or therapist has been trained to manage that, and they're neither shocked nor scandalised. They make no judgment. What they're focusing on is what's between us as a couple and how we can improve it. And that doesn't mean staying together. We shouldn't be together. But we should be able to separate well, perhaps, or live together better.
Hey, that's a wonderful note to end on. And I'm aware you've got to be somewhere and I've got to be somewhere. So thank you very much for your time. And it's been wonderful to chat to you. I'll put all the links on the website and so people can get in touch with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, well, that was the interview with Honor, and it was a conversation that I wasn't expecting at all, really. And she started to talk, and halfway through I said, I'm going to have to record this because you've given me stuff to really think about. So there's a few things. I don't know what things you picked up out of it. I think the first one for me was just, I mean, obviously all of this applies to adopters who are in relationships, not single adopters, so I understand that, so that kind of excludes a whole group, bunch of people. But just this idea that actually having children is just such a fundamental shift, and you can measure that shift.
Yeah.
I thought, wow. She was saying, no, we need to go really closer and really deeper. What was interesting, because I came straight from the interview and I spoke to a few people, and both of them looked at me and kind of went, yeah. And they were wobbling a bit, and I was wobbling a bit, and it just kind of, it was really interesting conversation about how the impact of adopting children and the impact on relationships, which I know for me has been huge.
I guess, I mean, you'll know more currently, because I can't remember all of the kind of relationship side of the Pharmet or the PAR report for adopt. But yeah, I think her comments about prepping social workers to support adopt is quite key, actually, to how some of us perhaps deal with being parents, as well as the kind of effect in our relationship. And, you know, I hold my hands up and say, you know, I think that having kids has affected our relationship in some positive ways, some negative ways, because social workers are obviously assessing adopters, thinking of the best kind of options for a child, their kind of task and role. But actually, you know, it's about the kind of longer term thing, isn't it? Where, you know, if those parents aren't together in 10 years' time because of the pressure of adopting children, then actually, is that in the best interest of the child? Probably not. I don't know.
No, and I mean, anecdotally, I know people, and also through sort of different social medias, you see hints of it, of people saying, we're just living separate lives, or the children have found a chink between us, a crack, and, you know, either my husband or my wife just feels totally unloved, or the children are rejecting one of the parents, and they find a way in, and actually that is catastrophic. You came to adopt and have children, but the love of your life is gone. Shocking, really.
Mm. Yeah. But
the other thing was, she sort of spoke about, which was slightly aside and not particularly adoption related, but the kind of the stigma around going and getting support around your relationship, which I thought, there's very few people there's very few people I talk to about my relationship with the good Mrs. C, mainly because she's like the all-seeing eye. She knows when I'm talking about her.
She does. You're right about that.
She's slightly scared.
She does. She has people in places that you wouldn't even know about, Mr. Coates, but yeah.
It just really made me think, and I thought that the service that Tavistock Relationship are offering is probably something that a lot of people would want to access and look into. I don't know. I mean, I will put the details up, and she was very keen that people sought that. And again, she brought it all back to children, sort of saying, actually, if you can get this bit right, then this is in the best interests of the children. This produces the best outcome. And I think... And I thought about Paula and I, and I think that one of our strengths has been that we've always had a united front. Even when we've disagreed, we've kind of been able to keep that together.
Yeah.
But it's been difficult. I mean, it's been very difficult, you know, and it continues to have its moments where it's actually really challenging, when actually I'm thinking, I'm feeling like I'm outside of this circle, or perhaps she's feeling outside of this circle, or I have to say to... No, she says to me after an event or something, she went, you need to do it this differently, or you got that wrong. And you're going to go, well, I don't like being told I'm wrong. That's not what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you can, you know, I'm very keen that we don't let our lives bare before people, but, you know.
No.
But it's tricky, isn't it? That's where it pinches.
Yeah. It is, yeah. I just think that, I mean, the one comment that she's, well, the statement that she made, actually, so people choosing between their marriage and a child. And I think that that's actually quite significant for me, in terms of, imagine having to make that decision, your marriage or your child. You know, you've gone into this kind of, this life, if you like, as a couple, and you've... I guess it depends on what way you look at it, doesn't it? In terms of what you were expecting, or what your expectations were in terms of the child that you might have. But that's a hell of a place to be, and a hell of a decision to make. You know, when you've come into a process and a journey to build a family, through choice in some cases.
There's always an element of choice, isn't there, slightly different.
Yeah, of course there is, yeah. But I guess that, you know, that's where it goes back to the preparation, not just for adopters, but for social workers as well, to make sure that, you know, people realise what they're actually getting themselves into. And actually, the days where even children would have therapy, you know, that's moved on significantly. And, you know, our children, and I'm talking about our children as a community now, I'm not talking about my children or your children. It's more acceptable to you know, for them to have therapy and of all this counselling and all that sort of stuff. Well, why should that not be the same for adopted parents from the off? You know, anybody who parents a child who's been through that, through any trauma, you know, should feel that they don't even have to ask for it. It should just be there. You know, for their relationship especially, because, you know, it's difficult enough raising a child who's had that trauma without having to deal with all the difficulties within a relationship because of that trauma.
Absolutely. And I think that we need to open our minds to that possibility as well as adopters, because often I see people who, their focus is, we need to fix this child. Mm-hmm. We need to, you know, this child is the issue. And I'm under no illusion that children bring a lot of baggage, but actually often we need to look in the mirror and go, I am part of this system. I am contributing, or I'm being drawn into stuff, and I need to learn how to not be drawn into it, or not to be, you know, when a child is purposefully trying to exclude one parent, that's really hard if you're that parent. You know, I see that on, I've seen that a few times. One parent is being pushed out, and you go, it's pretty rough, because actually, when you come into adoption, your focus will be, we as a couple will be caring for these children, but then you realise that actually that we as a couple thing is catastrophically altered. You know, you don't have the time to sit and, you know, go for coffees in the afternoon, or sit and watch EastEnders or whatever your thing is. Well, that is often removed, isn't it? Whatever your thing is.
Yeah.
You and Tris watching EastEnders. I know you do that. It's a big thing.
Well, I do. He doesn't. But yeah, you're right. But I think that's key as well, actually. No. In terms of relationships, it's all very well doing things together. But actually, there's a little bit of me that wants to say, for some, it probably doesn't apply to all, that you do need that kind of little bit of self as well. And I'm quite a kind of, I'm one of those people that does need that time to myself every now and again. And I found that very difficult when I was a stay-at-home dad. So all day with the children. And then evening, and everybody being jolly, and I was just like, I just want an hour to myself.
And then that's potentially hard for your...
Yeah, it just was.
Potentially hard for Tris, because he's kind of going, well, we used to do this. You know, I'm not saying that's the case, but that's my experience, is that where there was much more gaps and much more flexibility, that flexibility is removed. You are, you know, you'll know when your children come. Routine is kind of like, whoa. Everything is buttoned up. You know, you were having tea at this time, we're doing bedtime routines that take up an hour, and your life is restricted. And I think that Honor pointed that out, that people just are overwhelmed by having children. It's just, and then overlaying that with the complexity of, you know, like, you know, like us, we went from 0 to 3 in 10 days. You know, that's an unusual complexity that's unique. Which can be, and for some people it's too much. You know, it was too much for me. I was freaked out for at least 4 years. I'm feeling much better now.
I thought you were going to say 20 years then.
Well, now I'm into my 19th year as an adopter. I'm starting to find almost an easy.
I know.
Almost.
Are you?
No, I'm not. I'm getting there though. But it's taken time. No,
well, until tomorrow, and then you'll be back on it again.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, 11 years in, I it always surprised me. I think, oh, tomorrow's going to be the day where everything is. No.
It's interesting. I've been thinking about a blog I was going to write about this kind of anticipation of normality. I still believe that, when we're going to get an even keel, we're going to reach this, like, on tomorrow everything will be not okay, but we'll have a bit of peace where we can just consolidate, looking for this moment of consolidation that really seems to come.
I agree and I do wonder how many other people in our position are feeling the same thing, actually, because it must be quite a common thing to feel and not really analyze it, the same as your blog last week. That was quite interesting, because it's saying words, actually, I feel quite regularly.
Yeah. I mean, I think it kind of overwhelmed me last week, and I don't know what it was particular, but there was a few little incidents, a few comments by people, and I just thought, is there anything left of me that isn't adopted? You know, there's this guy who likes to ride bikes. The answer is no. But that's parenting as well, isn't it? That's not unique to us, but it seems like it's, you know, where I live.
No, that's right.
I do everything.
Yeah, I think the problem for us is that our parenting is going to take, in some cases, a lot longer than it would, you know, for our parents who had us through birth. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? You know, you are all consumed for 20 years maybe of being a parent in under normal circumstances. Actually, this is lifelong, you know, for a lot of us. And there's never going to be that kind of break from it. For some of us, actually, we're never going to be, you know, we're never going to have a break from it. And that's quite hard hitting if you've not thought about it like that before.
Yeah, I've got a couple of friends who are set in their 70s and it's every day. The kids are adults, well beyond young adulthood into middle age almost. Well, that's a really miserable end.
Well, thanks for that, Al.
Oh, good grief.
Yes. I think we've lost everybody now. Are you there? Hello. Yeah. But anyway, listen, a few days away from the humdrum of work and parenting, and we're just, because I'm not going to be parenting because I'm going without my children.
How do you manage that? That's so amazing.
Please don't ask. Big secret, honestly. We've got a really big cage. No, we don't. I'm joking. We do not have
I can't believe you've just told me that. Oh, my goodness. I've got a number I have to ring now.
Very good support network. Yeah, I know. It's off you go.
Of course, you've only got three kids, haven't you? So I guess it's pretty easy for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's really easy, you know.
Well, we're going away.
Part-timer.
We're going away. We're taking some of the children and leaving others. Others have elected to stay behind, which is great. Because they're really happy to stay behind.
It
changes the dynamic. So we do things like we're spontaneous. We stay up late. We don't eat at mealtimes. We're just crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
And that,
I know. It is madness, isn't it? Absolute madness. Yeah. But it's great fun. I love it.
Yeah, we have another Diet Coke. To hell with the consequences.
Oh dear.
It's a laugh.
Yes.
So the next podcast, I've got someone who has been promising to speak to me for a long time, but someone you know and like, Annie Crombie. Annie Crombie. You've just blown my levels out.
Oh, the lovely Annie Crombie. Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay. What?
You know her as well, so, you know.
Yeah, I do know
her. Or you know of her, I should say.
No, and she's, I'm very excited, and so I've got some interesting thoughts. So actually, if anyone's got any questions, like Annie Crombie is the head of the CVAA, which is the Consortium of Voluntary Adoption Agencies. So I'm really intrigued about that, because what should I ask her, Scott? What would you like me to ask her?
I think that my questions would be, what in her eyes is the objective of the CVAA?
I promised her that I wouldn't go all paxman on her, so I have to ask her nice questions.
That is a nice question.
My question.
She will be fun. That is a nice question.
The regional adoption agencies.
Go on, tell me.
How do voluntary kind of dovetail into that, and what's the future? What is the future of the adoption landscape from her perspective?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people love their adoption agencies, and a lot of people get a lot of support from the little independents offer an excellent service.
That's a good question. I like that. I like that question. It's very good.
So hopefully that'll be a fantastic conversation, and we'll get that out. I think we might have a small break because we're on holiday, aren't we? So
I think we need to have a little break. Yeah. We do, yes. And so we might be a few weeks.
And then I've got a plan to maybe speak to our friend Blair again, because he's a foster carer.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a foster carer, social worker, and he's an adoptee, and he's moved children from foster care into adoption.
He's just got everything going for him, hasn't he?
He's the bionic social worker. So I shall track him down and speak to him. Right, okay, I'm aware that time's ticking. We're prattling on.
It is.
So, hey, you have a fantastic holiday, and I hope that everything
goes well. I do, and have a really good Easter as well.
Yeah, hope you have plenty of eggs and all that kind of stuff. Okay?
Yeah.
Yep, look after yourself.
Yes, exactly. Goodbye.
Ta-ta.
Bye. Take care. Bye. Ta-ta. Bye-bye.